Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person, A Private Work by Clint, read for you by Josie. Preface, Part 3. That government agency, which legally records and issues birth certificates, is a chronicler, a recorder, an event historian. And all history, his story, is indeed naught but the fiction of the chronicler. The history of every public person begins with the recording of the birth event. The pretended life of a fictional person, legal status, is always based in the time domain, never in the timelessness of God's nature. Legal persons, masks, are strictly the creation of man, never of God, and are never a result of any natural process. To be perfectly clear, we must realize that Jehovah has no history. Nature is not bound by history in any way for its existence, its continuous being. For what is that permanence of Jehovah contains within all that is, was, and shall be, which might be styled as the histories recorded by man, as the apologetic chronicles of all things vain and temporary. That is to say that God, Jehovah, is the truth of all existence at this very moment and this moment alone, which in its permanence will be the same as it exists tomorrow, despite man's various shenanigans against its natural harmony and design. The essence of Jehovah, of life itself, and of the law that abounds over it, simply does not change, any more than the substance that is the potter's clay ceases to be clay once it's formed into a bowl or chalice. Inversely, the realm of man's recreation relies absolutely upon its own created history and recording of legal, unreal events, such fictions being in no way a living or permanent existence. All creations of man are dead and temporary. God creates, while man merely names and repurposes God's creation inharmoniously with God's law of nature. This distinction will be pulled into focus throughout this work, and is key to comprehending the scriptural teachings as what is both real and figuratively life and death. For what is of, belonging to, man, and what is of, a creation of, God, is never the same. This is not religion, but the very essence of all law. It is only when the words, names, nouns, of man overcomes the word, frequency, and harmony, of God, that a secular war against our own spiritual nature ensues. Of course, it is also a self-evident truth that nature always wins in the end, for what is timeless encompasses the minuteness of all that is merely man's supposedly recorded history. Man, to put it simply, will be defeated either when he realizes he's part of nature and returns to it, ceasing to fight against that which sustains him, or he arrogantly defeats himself by defeating nature's gift of life. Man's temporary designs, his languages, and his corruptions of nature will all eventually die in the end, just as eventually sandcastles are flooded, leveled, and absorbed back into which they were created from. Temporary is not necessarily a word associated with length of time or false existence as much as it is a contradistinction to the permanence of the design of nature and its law. In other words, what is temporary has not its source in nature, God's realm, but in man's. The flower that blooms never seeks death or extinction, for the intent of its blooms is to seed itself and continue its life force in another. So too is man's seed. Man, like the flower, never dies off, for his offspring lives on, his roots giving eternal life through the passing of the blood of his body. This, in its most basic of understandings, is what it is to worship God everlasting. It is to live by religiously following only God's law of nature, and to protect it at all costs in self-sacrifice. Here lies the difference between these two realms, of the permanent, God's creation and word, and the temporary, man's creation and laws. Between each and every law passed or rescinded, between every court decision and precedent set by tens of thousands of judges in this nation, between every failed and failing empire built to impossibly last, and between every treaty signed, each of these temporary states of what government is and its law is necessarily changes. Its foundation is constantly being altered, for its foundation is only the fictional designs and words of official persons in flattering, legally assigned titles. Its foundation is belief, and such faith in false things always dies. There is never a day in which these governments are the same from one day to the next, and certainly not from one generation to the next. Only the word, law, of God, may save us from our pretended, temporary selves as straw men, even from our own words, simply because that word is never changing and thus never ending. It is the very frequency and harmony of life and what is true existence. To be clear, the word of God is not made of the words of man, but is the self-evident and self-existent reality of the very design and law of life itself. Inversely, the legal law of man is made entirely of words that have absolutely nothing to do with God's nature. We must realize that God's wrath will only be manifested as the consequences of our own vain, irresponsible, and inharmonious actions against that permanent design of nature that sustains our very existence. Just as in the legal realm, ignorance of God's natural law, word, is no excuse. As we scientifically tear down the heavenly utopia that is the harmony of this untarnished nature of earth down to its microcosmic and microcellular level today, destroying it in a vain attempt to understand its design through the extremely limited purview of the art of human sciences, so too are we destroying ourselves by disregarding the self-evident word, law, of Scripture. Our wrath is our own. Only by the destruction of the minuscule individual parts of Jehovah and its nature may man have the ever-limited knowledge and discovery of the design of God's full nature. And to acquire such knowledge will necessarily spell the end of man, the end of that harmony, word, that sustains life. Tearing apart and killing anything so as to understand its source of existence is at best a psychopathy of anarchy, lawlessness, and at worst a legalized, amorally accepted, licensed science. God will of course remain, and hopefully those who embrace the reality of God as all the rest of nature, creation, lives and breathes only within God and without such destructive artifices or the foolish desire to comprehend them at their own expense. This is the true message of the Bible, and this truth is what the church and state wish to keep buried in protection of their legal system and its corporate structure. For the licensure for such destructive behavior by men can only be approved by that which is opposed to nature, opposed to God. Only through legally approved means may man destroy his own nature. And even more importantly, only through the propagandist lies of church and state, completely against God's word as promulgated by Scripture, may otherwise true men of God be tricked into allowing such unnatural destruction to take place. This work is presented with the intent to absolutely and without question show all of this to be the only truth, both in life and as the true spirit of the ancient scriptural teachings that have been so purposefully misapplied and misinterpreted that no man is thus able to attain his highest state of pure being in nature, heaven. For truth is not a word, not an opinion, and certainly not a legal fact. Truth is only self-existence. All other established truths of men's designs are fictions of the mind, mere excuses to act irresponsibly through the personification of the straw man argument, fallaciously blaming the artificial persons of men instead of taking full responsibility for their own true selves. Our actions are only ever our own, never that of the names and titles we pretend to be despite our true nature. It is this fictional matrix of legal naming and thus representation of all things that is so repeatedly warned about in the Bible and other sacred books of antiquity. But do not mistake these words as the religion, noun, of any man or system of men, least of all my own, for the truth of God, verb, and the fictions of man's doctrinal religions, nouns, names, are always opposed to each other, one created without man's designs and imaginations to benefit only God and thus man's true nature, and all others recreated to benefit only man's artificial, self-serving designs and corporate structure of all nations in mammon. When each of us begins acting in our true nature without the artifice of legal fictions, flattering titles, added names, insurance numbers, and memberships to such corporations, artificial persons, calling themselves as churches and government agencies, then and only then will our expression of religion be true and our individual lives be considered eternal, as purely religious ones under the highest law of nature. Only then may we see heaven for what it is. Religion, by any name, denomination, is only the false creation of man, an empty title, name, for what is real, verb. God knows no Christians, Muslims, or Jews. These are but false and flattering titles used by men who pretend religion without acting the part, without following the law. These names are not part of nature, creation, originating only from the imaginations of men. They are empty words. No pendant, no symbol, no crucifix, no baptismal certificate, no cross, no crescent and moon, no seal of Solomon, e.g. Star of David, in the dark arts of witchcraft, and no affiliation with anything in these commercial, non-profit systems of mammon can create this state of true religious being. All of these things are false idols, the symbology of magic words. What is symbolic is not what is real, and should never be worshipped above that which it supposedly represents in form, but without the actual substance. Only the anonymous, ambiguous actions of the private man may invoke this true nature, the actions of true love and charity, without any expectation of return on such investments into the welfare of all others, and into the mutually assured protection of all of God's creation. Only this revealed knowledge of the highest moral law of Scripture, ancient, self-evident knowledge, may ensure a man's place of natural liberty in God's kingdom of nature. Don't believe it? For most of my life, I didn't either. In order to understand what God is, I had to overcome the stumbling block of organized religion and public education. So too will you. What you are about to read will most certainly be an affirmation of just how misled we have all been. But you must choose to walk the path revealed so long ago that has been so hidden from so many generations before us by those false gods and the priest class, idols, of the nations of Caesar. Quote, deeply earnest and thoughtful people stand on shaky footing with the public. End quote. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. It is sometimes difficult to contemplate the importance of the specific meaning of words, and even more difficult to comprehend the extreme importance of these specifically defined words versus their ambiguous nature. In other words, the importance of the establishment and clarity of name and title, legal status of a fictional person, as property, is paramount to man's artificial law, for the proprietary law of persons only applies to proprietary legal persons. Remember, no man is actually a person, but all persons are the false representations of man. Man is of nature, while persons are always a creation of legal fiction, of man. What man creates is not and cannot be man, but merely a similitude of man, a Frankenstein monster. Ambiguity has no place in man's fictional legal realm, for all things artificial must be proven first to fictionally exist in word format before they may be examined and administered. This is to say that nothing of God, meaning nothing of self-existence and self-evidence, can be created by man. Thus he who makes an affirmation against you, namely he being the legal government of the state via its agent, attorney, must show evidence that a word has specific meaning, especially the specific name of a man's natural person. If the name is too ambiguous, meaning it carries two or more possible and presentable meanings, then it cannot be proven to legally, artificially exist without attestation and confirmation by he who uses it. The first Christian name cannot stand legally without a legal last surname attached, for the first name is always only ever considered as ambiguous, and thus technically can only be private, and thus publicly anonymous, meaning that the man cannot be recognized as the artificial persona created by the mixed name, titles, numbers, and marks of the legal realm and government, if he only uses his Christian first name, in an unblemished state of being. In other words, only when the name is less respected than the subject of the name is man free from any legally contracted dis-ease. And so an anonymous work such as this need not exist without any ambiguous name attached to remain a private work, but only without an unambiguous legal name attached that causes it publicity as to become public property. To clear up any doubt of intent or law, the author here chooses to remain anonymous only in the legal sense of the word, keeping my good, God-given, and highest in authority and source, first, name, separate, and without any meaning or attachment to that which is fictional, legal, and/or artificial. For the purposes of this work, my first name is my last name, my last will and testament, and the only proof possible of my true intent under God. No suggestion or consideration of the use of the non-legal name, cognomen, Richardson, should be assumed as a legal use in any way whatsoever within, and its use serves only as the biological description of the blood of my true family name, not of any form of state personhood, legal status. It is not based on any legally considered event, nor is it used as any type of nickname or ag nomen. And so under absolutely no circumstances should this work be mistaken or construed in any manner to be a work of any fictional, legal person, especially one surnamed Clint Richardson, or as any other legal entity or persona, nor that it was created in or under any jurisdiction or law of man or of nations. It and the responsibility for its existence is mine and mine alone. I am only ever to be considered as a creation and act of God. This is my life and my highest law, and it is declared here in as unambiguous a language as I have in my knowledge to construct in order to express my own pure intent. For the reader, please note that these statements are only those of intent, placed here for the purpose of quelling any future considerations by unscrupulous agents, attorneys, and tax farmers within man's legal jurisdiction and systems of law. It is necessary. It is evidence of my own patent and intended ambiguity in the matter of this work as an establishment of its anonymity and of its privacy, as well as an intentional, total separation of its intent and existence to any legal fiction or persona without any exception. Quote, a patent ambiguity cannot be cleared up by extrinsic evidence or is never holden by averment. End quote. Black's Law, 4th edition. Quote, an ambiguous contract is to be interpreted against the seller. End quote. Black's Law, 4th edition. Quote, an ambiguous plea ought to be interpreted against the party pleading it. End quote. Black's Law, 4th edition. Quote, in doubtful cases, the presumption is always on behalf of the Crown. End quote. Black's Law, 4th edition. And just who or what is the seller of the contract of personhood? The answer can only be government, of course, the very creator and patenter of such fiction. If I sign a contract by my Christian first name alone, an act I would never do, I have nevertheless not signed it legally. Nature has not been defeated until I use a full sig nature showing intent to act in the proprietarily admixed and patented first Christian name and last surname of the straw man I am acting in commercial agency for. Thus all contracts will be interpreted against me, for I have established that false legal identity as myself in surety. Once I am identified legally, anti-God, I have thrown myself at the mercy of the court, run by a magistrate God and administrator of legal fictions, for I am acting in the person, property, of another. But what's so important about a name? Why do I wish to remain an anonymous, private, ambiguous act of God for the purposes of this work and in my own life? And why should I be so fervent here at the beginning to establish the fact that I am only that I am, and that I am not a natural person or any other form of registered or registrable legal personification or status? We have so much to discover. First and foremost, in wishing to keep this as a purely private work with all rights and privileges reserved to my own true self, I must here declare my own ambiguity so that no de facto government can claim otherwise, and so that any attempts to legally stall or steal, pirate this work into the public realm through copyright may be extinguished at the outset. Let us be clear here that a natural person is a straw man, the birth name and imaginary vessel of a personification of a legal status that does not exist in reality, in nature, and only has artificial life in a legal jurisdiction, the fictional name, noun form of a fictional place. We cannot thus assume that all men are natural persons, which exist only in places not of God's nature for the purpose of this linguistic trickery of legalese and of flattering titles such as these, is purely publicly to register a man into a fictional, artificial state of being and belief, love, under a contract of law that is against his own purpose and nature. In other words, an unambiguous legal name and title causes an otherwise ambiguous, legally nameless, unmarked man, as a creation and act purely of God, to magically reappear in the fictional legal realm as that which is only his image without substance. It's like being drawn as a cartoon caricature of oneself. Caricature, noun, a figure or description in which the beauties are concealed and blemishes exaggerated, but still bearing a resemblance to the object. Verb transitive, to make or draw a caricature, to represent as more ugly than the life. Webster's 1828. To be in citizenship under the United States, a municipal corporation and district, is to be a caricature, false persona, in the realm and jurisdiction of legal fiction. And fiction is always considered as dead. Thus, the person kills the nature of man by causing unambiguity, by destroying the true nature of man and representing him only in cartoon form without substance, without consideration of blood and soul. For the agents of that imaginary realm cannot entertain us, men, as its resident guests unless we accept its mark of name and number and agree to its dominion, not over us, but over our state of surety and joinder of its artificial personification, caricature of us, over the names, titles, and other bestowed fictions that we use that belong to the state. Its law is only ever over its own property, its own false creation, its own fictional persons, just as God's law is only over man as God's creation of nature. It is the use of another's name, the enjoined surname, and all legal benefits attached to that legal name that causes us to be enslaved by the law of persons, for we are acting in the persona of that false character and not as our true selves. Thus we work, play, pray, and make a living to benefit the state in a corporate commercial franchise of its sure dead name. To be free in commerce within a corporation is to be in political freedom, which is merely another word for legal franchise. Freedom in political society is an illusion, for true freedom is never political, fictional. Natural freedom is not made of words. And so the state is our surrogate landlord and master, our principal, and we its servants and agents, even as we attend its corporate churches under its false proprietary surname, person. We seem to forget the simple words of the scriptures, which plainly declare that man may have but one master, God or mammon. Citizenship is abandonment of God, and thus is an abandonment of what is called unalienable, God-given, or natural rights. To add a positive, state-granted right is to take away a negative, God-given right. Again, a citizenship of a nation only has franchise rights to operate in the person, property, of the district under distress, distraint, and seizure. And to be perfectly clear, a citizenship can exist nowhere else but in that jurisdiction, property, of the United States. It can live in a commercial franchise, never true freedom, for persons are never of the natural realm of truth. Quote, in a popular sense, the political rights of subjects and citizens are franchises, such as the right of suffrage. End quote. Black's Law, 2nd edition, definition of franchise. Franchise equals freedom. It's very Orwellian, to be sure. War is peace, commerce, and freedom is slavery, franchise. In the legal fiction, these turn out to be provable facts of law, just as all 10 planks of Marx's Communist Manifesto have literally been made law in the United States. And yet it has always been this way. Under the popes and kings and other gods of the empires and nations of history, the common people have always been controlled as property, as persons, fictions of law. To show our collective and intentional brainwashing and ignorance of this term of the legal art, let's stop and consider who could have possibly written this work that you are presently reading if it was not some, quote, natural person. If all men are automatically considered as natural persons, this law in the United States Code would be a pointless redundancy, as it would refer to all living men in total sum across the entirety of the earth as such in legal title. But we all know that the law of nations only exists in the jurisdiction, fictional realm, of each nation that agrees to be part of that artificial law. And so we can state clearly here that all men are indeed not natural persons, and that all men are thus not acting as straw men without some deceitful inducement and voluntary intention to do so. The principles, maxims of law certainly agree. Quote, every person is a man, but not every man a person. End quote. Black's Law, First Edition. And so, as we will discover, the term natural person only refers to the legal, fictional status of a commercial or other form of citizenship, vessel, as a fictional creation of a legal, fictional character, but never to a man considered under and following God's nature and highest law, which admonishes and forbids respect of all persons. Fiction destroys the true nature of everything it figuratively and contractually touches. It reveals no substance, representing only an imaginary form. A person is no different from any other fictional character in any other fictional story or novel. And the government is the writer and publisher of each fictional persona, causing each of us to change our natural course in life towards some mammon-driven adventure in that legal commercial realm, and thus ultimately towards the pursuit of money, fiction, instead of God. Our master is chosen not by our thoughts, but by our actions in or not within a commercial persona, for a natural person is only a valuable consideration in time, labor, as money. We choose our God not by choice of name or title, but by which law we follow and thus which nature we respect, for the nature of fiction is always a lie. We pretend to exist individually, not divided from the nation, as a proprietary slave, natural person, of it, in a persona that must be driven by an intermediary puppeteer, agent, which is also connected to the strings, laws, of higher puppet masters, creator, God, principle. For to use the property, name of person, of another requires the man driving it, in agency, to also be driven by the legal strings and law of the actual owner of that property, name of person, under the law of the legal district. The false nature, legal source and realm, of fiction is not and is directly opposed to the nature, reality creation, of God. Art is never reality, only a fictional representation of it. These are two opposing realms as matter and antimatter, or to be more accurate, Christ and Antichrist. A spiritual man exists despite any and all status, words, while a person unambiguously and specifically exists only as some assigned and registered, imaginarily created, unique legal status. One is God's creation and one is man's recreation. One true existence has substance and is able to be comprehended and verified as a self-evident truth by all of the senses, whereas that other artificial, legal existence is utter nonsense, an untruth, unnatural, and so must be proven to exist in a fictional realm through some legalistic, artificial means, such as contract, bond, identification, etc. A legal existence, to be clear, occupies no space in God's realm of reality and nature. It is not a creation of God, it is not of source, and has no natural origin. It is intangible, a fiction of the mind, existing only in the imagination of men and as words on paper. This must be understood here, for I, as the private author of this work, certainly claim no such legal name, title, or other legal mark, sign, or status, persona, nor any protections, insurances, or guarantees thereof for this work, having no nickname or surname to be considered thereof. I claim no protection and thus give no subjection to any law offering such artificial monetary or other securities or protections. I gladly attach my Christian and only my Christian name to this work, and so no implication or presumption of any additional name caused by any event or other legal means or recreation should be construed here. Quote, when a man is made a spiritual peer, he loses his surname, when a temporal, his Christian name. End quote. Jonathan Swift, Thoughts on Various Subjects, Moral and Diverting. It's simple. One who lives temporally must do so in person. He who lives spiritually must do so without person. One never loses one's Christian name. One only loses the power and authority of the Christian name by placing a legal surname next to it, altering the natural course of the spirit towards worldly things of no substance. The spirit knows and respects no name but the unblemished, first, God-given gift name, or Christian name, just as the temporal or legal realm knows and respects no name but the last, or surname, so attached, representing a sign of defeat of the will, and a power of man too weak-minded to be voluntarily bound under only God's law. It is the legal mixture of these two names, of reality and a fiction of law, that causes man to lose touch with his nature and source. The last name reveals the master. And so for the benefit of the reader, I can safely say that the hardest thing I have ever forced myself to do is to use only my first, Christian, and highest name upon this work. This abandonment of the fictional persona, and with it my so-called last name, is just one of the many mental hurdles I must jump over in order to correct my own path and get reacquainted with my true self. For the admixed legal name is the source of all fictional statuses, titles, dis-ease, and registered things. Without it, I am only that which I am and nothing more. I am simply private. I am no person, place, or thing. This word, name, is the hinge upon which all legal, artificial things attach and have standing under, understanding. Without a name, which signifies a distinct person, place, or thing, name equals noun, there is only ambiguity, making it impossible to distinguish one man or thing from another one with the same Christian first name. And so no legal aspects of the artifice may be attached to the man, for no legal person, status, can be found and attached to God's nature. A man without a name in law is unseen, unheard, unalienable, and unattainable. For all defects and titles are only of the name of a legal status, false persona, not of the man. Man, in God's purview, is a creation of perfection, no matter what shape or form, as all nature is in its self-evident true existence. But this is only true as long as man remains pure in his own source of nature, which can only happen if a man religiously follows the law of God. To defile the law of nature is to defile Jehovah, for the body is a temple of Jehovah, and so such legal persona is a defilement of self as part of God's perfect creation of nature. And so any additions to man in the form of imaginary legal fictions of the law, licenses to commit crime, and other inventions of men can only be an abomination of that perfection of design, and can only stand temporarily in disharmony against it. Do not take this in a religious sense as much as in a protective, lawful sense. You are perfect in your creation, born into nature by its design and no other, created in the purest of innocence, and without artifice or blemish, word, name, or mark. It is only the events that take place after birth that cause us defects in name and by title, causing our own claim over our own minds, bodies, and souls to become secondary to the gods of the law of nations. And so this word name is one that you may consider revisiting often as we press forward, for it is the magnet that attracts all other legal considerations. For a person must have and be created with a name, while a man is inherently nameless. Words, and especially names, nouns, are simply not born of nature, not creations of God, being only the tools of men. As we progress, each facet of this word name will be meticulously examined so that by the end of this multi-volumed work, the reader will have no misgivings or doubts that all sin, as everything evil, artificial, legal, and debilitating, cannot exist without a contracted additional name, noun. Just remember, no names and no words actually exist in nature. The God of nature, also said to be the God of life and self-existence, is not the creator of artifice, nor of names, nor of titles, nor of numbers, nor of codes, nor of symbols, nor of language, nor of anything that is merely a creation of the minds of men. Nature, God, as so-called Jehovah, exists despite whatever we may call it or call ourselves, for we are each and every one of us a part of that whole being of nature, perfect and untainted. No man, no life, no thing, and no place is created by God into nature with any name, noun, attached to it. There is only one place and one life. Man does not hunt and gather food by luring and calling it by name, nor does he grow or find his food by invoking its title. Nothing in nature is a slave to its prescribed name as man allows himself to be. And yet, by invoking the artfully pretended authority of the legal names that man assigns to all things in God's nameless realm of nature, man enslaves all things under his own immoral law. Through the forcibly assigned names of all that is already in self-existence, God's nature and law is bypassed and ignored in lieu of the law of names, of fictional persons, places, and things. When all of nature is personified, redefined, and thus anthropomorphized into legal words, names, and titles, then all of nature has been placed into an artificial matrix of false valuation, where every aspect of every life form is assigned a value in money. And when the words and names are considered more real than life and nature itself, all of which together is considered as Jehovah or as the living God, then hell on earth has been legally created, for what is legally named is therefore spiritually dead. For a price, anything in nature may be sold and destroyed by the legally minded man, acting in persona and law, not his own, as that which is pretended to be unbound by the law of God's nature. Welcome to the new millennium, to the godless virtual reality and artificial intelligence of the 21st century, where all of nature as creation is no longer celebrated, worshipped, and protected as the source of life and as the monotheistic God. Comprehend this, and you may comprehend the entire foundation of all of man's legalistic, artificial law, which can only be attached and have authority over artificial legal persons, places, and things, nouns, names, none of which actually exist in nature, for none of these are original acts, verb, of God. Without such a straw man, without the lies of man's designs against the origin and source of man in nature under God, man is simply in perfect ambiguity. His lack of persona and of legal name equals a lack of legal capacity, meaning the law over artificial persons, places, and things cannot stick to the real and untainted man, because the man is not wearing any unambiguous proprietary law suit, false persona, of another. And so we must realize that true freedom is to be no thing. A person is a named thing, an entity not of nature, and therefore not free in nature. A person has no place or respect in God's realm and law. This is again the foundation of law. Our actions and the law we follow represent the God we choose to worship. One thing is for sure, all men will have a God, be it the legal gods of nations or the true God of nature. This is a self-evident truth. It is inescapable. For the law doesn't choose us, we choose it. And only by our actions under that law is our choice in God or of mammon manifest. Wearing a cross or other empty symbol around one's neck while every day breaking the law of nature is foolishness in the eyes, judgment of God. And yet this state of limbo, of lukewarmness to the scriptural knowledge of law, is exactly where the church wishes us to subsist under its false doctrines, idolatry, and imagery. Name, noun. 1. That by which a thing is called, the sound or combination of sounds used to express an idea or any material substance, quality, or act, an appellation attached to a thing by customary use, by which it may be vocally distinguished from other things. A name may be attached to an individual only, and is then proper or appropriate, as John, Thomas, London, Paris. Or it may be attached to a species, genus, or class of things, as sheep, goat, horse, tree, animal, which are called common names. Specific or generic, special or general, by species or by genus. 2. The letters or characters written or engraved expressing the sounds by which a person or thing is known and distinguished. 3. A person. They list with women each degenerate name. 4. Reputation, character, that which is commonly said of a person, as a good name, a bad name. 5. Renown, fame, honor, celebrity, eminence, praise, distinction. What men of name resort to him? 6. Remembrance, memory. The Lord shall blot out his name from under heaven. Deuteronomy 29:20. 7. Appearance only, sound only, not reality, as a friend in name. Revelation 3:1. 8. Authority, behalf, part, as in the name of the people. When a man speaks or acts in the name of another, he does it by their authority or in their behalf, as their representative. 9. Assumed character of another. Had forged a treason in my patron's name. 10. In Scripture, the name of God signifies his titles, his attributes, his will or purpose, his honor and glory, his word, his grace, his wisdom, power, and goodness, his worship or service, or God himself. 11. Issue, posterity that preserves the name. Deuteronomy 25, verse 6. 12. In grammar, a noun. To call names, to apply opprobrious names, to call by reproachful appellations. To take the name of God in vain, to swear falsely or profanely, or to use the name of God with levity or contempt. Exodus 20, verse 7. To know by name, to honor by particular friendship or familiarity. Exodus 33, verse 12. Christian name, the name a person receives by baptism, as distinguished from surname. Verb transitive, to call, to name, to invoke. 1. To set or to give any person or thing a sound or combination of sounds by which it may be known and distinguished. To call, to give an appellation to. She named the child Ichabod. 1 Samuel 4, verse 21. Thus was the building left ridiculous, and the work confusion named. 2. To mention by name, to utter or pronounce the sound or sounds by which a person or thing is known and distinguished. Neither use thyself to the naming of the Holy One. 3. To nominate, to design for any purpose by name. Thou shalt anoint me to him whom I name to thee. 1 Samuel 16. 4. To entitle, to the name of Christ, to make profession of faith in him. 2 Timothy 4 verse 1. Webster's 1828. Bottom line? Only your given first name is your own. It is man's only truly spiritual property, as is that to which one passes on in gift to one's child. It is respect of your own pure and unblemished true self, free from the servitude to anyone or anything but the highest law of God. It is your origin, representing only your true source, state, and substance of being, as the harmonious trinity of mind, body, and soul. It is called the Christian name in law, referring to the God-given name that cannot be defeated, for the Creator controls all that is created by it. This is not a fact that is up for debate, and every legal dictionary, opinion of the court, will tell you that your first name is the Christian name. To deny this and the power that that name holds is a fool's errand. Quote, names are divided into Christian names, as Benjamin, and surnames, as Franklin. No man can have more than one Christian name. When a person uses a name in making a contract under seal, he will not be permitted to say that it is not his name, as if he sign and seal a bond, A and B, being his own and his partner's name, and he had no authority from his partner to make such a deed, he cannot deny that his name is A and B. And if a man describes himself in the body of a deed by the name of James and signs it John, he cannot, on being sued by the latter name, plead that his name is James. End quote. Definition number 11 for name, Bouvier's 1856 Law Dictionary. Remember, it is their system, their words, and therefore their definition. It is not reality, and so to argue over the correct form of fiction, the truth about a lie, makes you a bigger fool than anyone. If you use one of their words, one of their names, you cannot claim to be a non-user. Be not bothered by the use of the word Christian. Rather, realize that their, the state's, use of that word signifies that the power of Christ is not only recognized in that court, but is more powerful than any name they design and seek to attach to that first, source, name. Grow up. Stop denying what is self-evident and stop making excuses for remaining the slave of false gods. But most of all, stop trying to defeat that which cannot be defeated. For like a casino, the house always wins. Why? because it is not your system, it is not your law, and it is not in your power or authority to alter their proprietary terms that govern their own property, persons, places, and things. If they say you have a Christian name, you better damn well accept that fact and use it to your advantage, not deny it, and stand in a completely unlearned idiocracy of denial. Simply stated, the acknowledgement by the courts of your Christian first name is an acknowledgement of your power to choose your own law. They must give you a choice or their law is void. And so in order to cause you to consent to their law of fiction, they summon you to appear in their fictional persona. They call you by their proprietary name, not your own. They get you to consent to the additional surname, and thus to the law that rules over that last artificially created birth name. But most importantly, the judge gets you to call him your father, even as you appear as the person of that legal administrative god, judge. All his power rests on your voluntary acceptance of the state's proprietary surname, being not only attached to, but attached in superiority over the first, source of nature, name. By this contractual binding of names, the state may now bypass the natural law and treat you as its subject, voluntary slave, under its own fictional law. Just like any other animal form of legally named cattle, chattel, or livestock, the man that acts in the surname of another is considered merely as human capital to be managed, for while appearing and acting in the agency and persona of their legal property, surname, we pretend to be something we are not. And there is nothing more pathetic or more corrupt than a nation of slaves that believe they are free, and which are given license to break with the highest foundation law of their creator. Stock. Descents. This is a metaphorical expression which designates, in the genealogy of a family, the person from whom others are descended. Those persons who have so descended are called branches. Bouvier's 1856 Law Dictionary. All other additions of name, title, number, mark, or any other artificial designation, even those of a sexually descriptive nature, are merely legalistic, fictional creations of man. To add any other name or title to your first original name is to take God's given name, that is, your first name, in vain. It is to change your stock, your status, persona. And so to act in the name of another is to attach the bad name of another to your good God name. And only under this false surname can crimes against nature and all of life be legally justified. For we pretend to be a person falsely created by law that is not our true self, as if the actions of some fictional name can be responsible for our own actions. The duty of personal responsibility for our own actions is lost. This is the gateway, the source of all sin. S-Y-N. The scriptures are replete and repetitious with warnings against all forms of legal personification. They warn against the act of respecting persons and flattering titles, and of the power of such evil, artifice, to cause us to act outside of God's law of nature, outside of our very self, which is to say that we act against our very own nature and that of others against the harmonious design of creation. But let us be clear that the personification of Jehovah as the story of Jesus Christ is in no way a legal fiction. Its intent is not to establish an artificial legal person, but to tell us the story of and give an example of the highest law to follow. This difference, the same difference in all personifications and anthropomorphized characters in moral storytelling from Plato to Stephen King, must be separated from what are the amoral intentions of all established fictions of law, called as legal persons. The moral, parabolic, allegoric story of a personified character in a story is not the same as the falsely created legal existence of a person. To tell the story of the moral law through a character in a story is not the same thing as creating a fictional man, person, in legal society. The Bible is, of course, against all legal things. In fact, the whole story of Christ is utterly against that of legal personhood, and the false, flattering titles of the religious and social class systems that go with it. To be clear, both the taking of and respecting of a last name, surname, and legal, flattering title for ourselves and over others, especially under a man's legal governance, is one of the most oft spoken about sins of the Bible and of other ancient scriptures. If anything, the law of the scriptures, the self-evident law of God and nature, says only to act and be responsible as exactly what we are, as our true selves without any attached, forced names or titles, styles, with no fictions, insurances, protections, or securities from the artificial constructs of man's designs of law and mammon. For only in and by another's name can the act of the man be artificially blamed on his fictional, imaginary person, personified self-image. This is just a cop-out, a lack of personal self-responsibility. In other words, the various licenses granted to the fictional person under false law in a simulated existence, persona, causes a man to break the covenant of God's natural law, as he pretends that the responsibility for his own actions may be blamed on that fictional character, person in law, that has no substance without belief in, love of, its legal capacity. This is a similarly evil disposition as that of any soldier, especially one that bombs innocent families with drones while claiming that only his flattering title, soldier, was responsible, not his own true self. Just following orders, the cry of the oppressor and of the slave, and the perfect example of the mind control, government, power of the agency relationship. The point is that God judges every man alone and naked, without the fictional make-believe personas, masks, characters, and flattering titles he pretended to be hid under in real life. Only a soldier, for example, can legally kill without responsibility for his actions, in war or in peace, for his artificial title gives legal, anti-God, anti-nature, license, legal permission, to kill another part of God's creation, which his government master has reclassified into a flattering title such as terrorist or insurgent. And so the fictional soldier kills not a man, but another fiction under the legal law. Yet the highest law of God respects no such falsities and fictitious titles, and sees only man killing another man, a son of God killing his own spiritual brother of God's creation. But most importantly, only by using God's name in vain, in contract with the devils of the church and state, that is the Christian, God-given name as our first and highest authority of name, by attaching our Christian name to any other name, i.e. legal surname, we have taken God's gift and utterly disrespected its purpose and reason in vain, taking the law of the fictional person, noun, name, over that of the law of nature or God's law, verb, of personal conduct. The law of nature is a self-evident law of conduct between men. Murder has no place therein, no matter what the excuse. Thou shalt not kill means the same thing as thou shalt not kill in person or flattering title. Instead, we kill for the benefit of false gods in the name of commerce, of money, and of authority. And governments collect on the insurance for each soldier, person, property. They commit to danger and subsequent legal death. It's a win-win. And now, after that brief explanation, please allow me to continue with this spiritual disclaimer against all legality and artificial means to destroy and make public, pirate, this work. No natural or other legal person, name, may own or copyright this work in any way under any system of law, public or private, franchise or contract. The author claims sole privileges, total privacy, in all respects to this work under the highest law of God, and I offer it freely and with pure intent to all who seek. There is no need to steal it in petty theft, for you cannot steal from the willing, from a man who asks you, the reader, to share this work with all others. You cannot steal that which is offered freely and without any expected consideration in any kind or form. Quote, the term financial gain includes a receipt or expectation of receipt of anything of value, including the receipt of other copyrighted works. End quote. U.S. Code, Title 17, Chapter 1, Section 101. The United States dollar is a copyrighted and patented work under the property of the United States government, especially in its intangible, non-cash, form called credit and debt that cannot be created without license from its creator government. And I assure you that as a public person, you do not own anything that is public, including your legal name and person, and especially not the money in your pocket or in a bank account. Legal persons are as much the property of government as the money that persons are allowed to use in that agency relationship. The positive right to use anything is not to be confused with the right of true ownership. Thus, I declare here that I have no expectation whatsoever now or in the future of the receipt of any currency or any form of valuable thing, copyrighted work and or legal tender, real or fictional, in any form of exchange or note for the free gift that is this work. No act other than a purely spiritually charitable one should ever be construed by any man, regardless of fictional status or while acting in the pretended character of a legal person and or party to any legal system, or constitutional or unconstitutional writing, etc. In this light, I hereby declare that this work of my own labor, property, is not for commercial or other sale in any capacity whatsoever from myself or from any fictional persona, natural, artificial, or otherwise, or by that which may be construed as any legal entity or other artifice or fiction of law. This work is not for profit any more than it is written by a prophet. It has and is intended to have no registered legal title, no name, no number, no barcode, and is to remain always and heretofore as valueless. It exists without the consideration of money or valuation by the systems of mammon. It is therefore priceless. It is not registered, certified, licensed, taxed, or taxable, nor should it ever be considered as such in the future under any name whatsoever. It is written by no fictional persona, which in reality under God is impossible, and so stands without respect of persons, for the God of nature respects no artifice, no person, or title of any man's artful creation. This work is created by only my own flesh and blood hand and no other. It is not official or formal. It is not a registered product of any fictional government, citizen, or public citizenship, nor is permission granted in any way for reproduction as such now or in the future by any such person or legally titled artifice. It is and always shall be a private, unpublished work, and therefore should never be recreated or reprinted in any public or commercial way, means, or form under any circumstances or means whatsoever unknown to myself, the non-legal, real author and laborer as a man and servant only of God. No consent is granted theretofore, nor should any form of consent be in any way construed or pretended to be implied, and any deviation from this notice must be expressed in writing and approved in equal manner by myself. As written, this is the only law applicable to this work or to my own self. To be clear, any reproduction of this work for any commercial or other valuable consideration of profit and or gain without absolutely express written permission by myself can and only will be considered as theft. Freely sharing this work without expectation of anything in return is the only acceptable act not covered by this will and testament of its author under God. In other words, this work exists only in the purest state of love and charity in nature and in no other form or place, noun, and as no other person or thing, name or noun. No other form of intent should ever be implied or construed with regard to this work or to the attitude and intent of its author, my true self, and any claim otherwise by any legal fiction or unwelcome person, persona non grata, should be hereby considered as utterly ridiculous and dismissible in any legal anti-God, court of man's so-called law, false doctrine. Fiction is always less than nature, and always submissive to God's law of nature. That is, if you don't sign your soul away in contract, devilry, with the state by attaching its proprietary surname after and over your own free and natural, God-given spiritual first name. Fiction is less than nature. Richardson is less than Clint. The problem is that most of us have no idea what a dirty word the term public actually is, representing a privately owned holding corporation, for most of us have lived our whole lives therein without contemplation of just what it is, comparable perhaps only as the concept of being plugged into the science fiction realm of the Matrix, without the knowledge that it even legally, artificially exists. To be in and exist in public persona is to not reserve any of our unalienable God-given rights, which apply only to our Christian, gift of God, names. To be public is to be in a state of total alienability. For even the public law is published, and thus applied to all public, government-owned, persons, legal statuses, which are government property. Publish, verb transitive, from Latin publico, see public. 1. To discover or make known to mankind or to people in general what before was private or unknown. To divulge as a private transaction, to promulgate or proclaim as a law or edict. we publish a secret by telling it to people without reserve. Laws are published by printing or by proclamation. Christ and his apostles published the glad tidings of salvation. The unwearied sun from day to day does his creator's power display and publishes to every land the work of an almighty hand. 2. To send a book into the world, or to sell or offer for sale a book, map, or print. 3. To utter, to put off or into circulation, as to publish a forged or counterfeit paper. 4. To make known by posting or by reading in a church, as to publish bans of matrimony. We say also, the persons intending marriage are published, that is, their intention of marriage is published. Webster's 1828. With further contemplation and due diligence, we find that this word publish stems from a much more sinister root, which is technically the same notion of what public citizenship is. When a child wishes to roam the public halls of public school, to use the public restroom, for instance, he or she, as a registered public citizenship attending a public school, must obtain permission, temporary license, to travel to go to the bathroom, use its services, and return as a matter of predetermined, commercially licensed course. And so the child, acting in false legal persona and under state surname, is required to obtain a hall pass in order to set about said commercial course. This, in and of itself, is a merely microcosmic slice of the biopsy of every one of us in the public realm. We, as a U.S. district corporate citizenship, are required to have a pass to live, reside, and work within the lands of the foreign states, territories, we inhabit, for they are not our lands, and we are only tenants and renters on paper. Thus, we always need license and general identification as our national hall pass, public easement, to conduct interstate commerce. While this will be explained in detail within, for now let us comprehend that to publish anything, including the registering of our own vital statistics and that of our offspring and property into public citizenship, is just another word for pass. Pass, verb, in practice, to utter or pronounce, as when the court passes sentence upon a prisoner. Also, to proceed, to be rendered or given, as when judgment is said to pass for the plaintiff in a suit. In legislative parlance, a bill or resolution is said to pass when it is agreed to or enacted by the House, or when the body has sanctioned its adoption by the requisite majority of votes. In the same circumstances, the body is said to pass the bill or motion. When an auditor appointed to examine into any accounts certifies their correctness, he is said to pass them, i.e., they pass through the examination without being detained or sent back for inaccuracy or imperfection. The term also means to examine into anything and then authoritatively determine the disputed questions which it involves. In this sense, a jury is said to pass upon the rights or issues in litigation before them. In the language of conveyancing, the term means to move from one person to another, to be transferred or conveyed from one owner to another, as in the phrase, the word heirs will pass the fee. To publish, utter, transfer, circulate, impose fraudulently. This is the meaning of the word when the offense of passing counterfeit money or a forged paper is spoken of. Pass, utter, publish, and sell are in some respects convertible terms, and in a given case, pass may include utter, publish, and sell. The words uttering and passing, used of notes, do not necessarily import that they are transferred as genuine. The words include any delivery of a note to another for value, with intent that it shall be put into circulation as money. Passing a paper is putting it off in payment or exchange. Uttering it is a declaration that it is good, with an intention to pass or an offer to pass it. Noun, permission to pass, a license to go or come, a certificate emanating from authority, wherein it is declared that a designated person is permitted to go beyond certain boundaries, which, without such authority, he could not lawfully pass. Also, a ticket issued by a railroad or other transportation company, authorizing a designated person to travel free on its lines, between certain points or for a limited time. Black's Law, 4th edition. End of preface, part 3.